Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome back, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks to Jim and Brett Winterbull for holding down the fort for the past week, as they reported last week. We happily welcomed a new daughter in the past several days, and I'm pleased to say I'm not completely sleep-deprived, Jim. So thanks for doing such a great job in my absence, and it's good to be back in the swing of things.
Well, congratulations, Greg. It's obviously in a time when a lot of the news is not so great, it's always nice to have wonderful news on the home front.
Happy to be a pretty good martini last week. So, all right, on to the good martini. 4 weeks from today is Election Day. You might want to circle that on your calendar. And as of right now, voters are looking to send a message, perhaps more than any other midterm in recent memory. This from Paul Bedard over at the Washington Examiner. Courtesy of Gallup, angry and frustrated voters are planning to use the midterm elections in 1 month to tell President Obama they oppose his agenda, the highest no vote percentage Gallup has measured in the past 16 years. The polling outfit found that 32% of voters want to send a message of opposition with their vote, compared to just 20% who are sending a signal of support. So that's 32 to 20. It was slightly less than that, actually, in 2010, Jim, when obviously it was a very good year for Republicans at the polls. And even in President Bush's darkest hours of the 2006 midterms, it wasn't that big of a gap. So obviously that's just over half the people sending a message one way or the other. But with that kind of a gap, in combination with a new poll out from Investors Business Daily showing that 53% of Americans and 58% of independents already consider this a failed presidency, President Obama going out there trying to say this is his agenda on the line and all that sort of thing, that's all good news for Republicans.
Yeah, the failed presidency part is kind of very easy to buy into. Yes, last week we hit 5.9% unemployment. It only took 6 years after the Great Recession to get back to what was considered relatively high for the Bush era. Level of unemployment, the labor force participation rate is lower. Obamacare did not work out the way everyone expected. You can't keep your plan. You can't keep your doctor. The foreign policy, the world's burning down, one level after another, just, you know, one problem after another. Despite what you may have heard online, Greg, while you were out, I got into a bit of a Twitter dispute with the folks who were very proudly saying, well, I'm angry with Republicans. I'm staying home this year. They didn't nominate the guy I wanted, yada, yada, yada. This poll indicates that no, they're not. That the conservatives are fired up and ready to vote and ready to send a message in the midterm elections.
That certainly seems to be the case. And as Jim has pointed out, there's still a lot of tight polling going on in a lot of these key races. So we'll be watching that in the days to come as well. All right, on to the bad martini now. And anytime we're talking about the Middle East, you can bet the bad martini's not far behind. This courtesy of the Wall Street Journal. A Turkish President Erdogan saying Tuesday the besieged Syrian city of Kobani was in imminent danger of falling to Islamic State and called on the U.S.-led coalition fighting the radical group to bolster its air raids with ground operations. The U.S.-led air campaign hit Islamic State positions Tuesday near Kobani, but officials and Syrian opposition members said the militants were still advancing against Syrian Kurdish fighters. Erdogan saying you can't end this terrorism just by airstrikes. If you don't support them on the ground by cooperating with those who take up a ground operation, the airstrikes won't do it. Jim, there's a couple different aspects I want to get your thoughts on. The first is the very obvious one here, in that airstrikes are clearly, at least in this part of the region, not doing the job, and ISIS is on the march still.
Yeah, and that's, you know, kind of been this unmentioned or little mentioned aspect of this. Yes, it was significant that the U.S. was beginning airstrikes. But if you look at how, you know, ISIS just responded to them by dispersing their forces, by going to ground, by not bunching together in big, obvious targets the way they used to. And there's actually a decent story on NBCNews.com pointing, you know, with a lot of experts saying, you know, it's not quite window dressing per se, but it's simply not going to be decisive enough. Dropping a bomb here or there is just not the same as having a whole bunch of guys on the ground shooting back at ISIS. We continue to lack serious allies on the ground there. Now, it's kind of interesting this is coming from Erdogan, who, let's face it, you know, say Turkey, you're not too far from there. And this city that ISIS is knocking on the door of is right there on the Turkish-Syrian border. So say Turkey, don't you have some troops in the area that could lob some artillery in their direction? I mean, Now, what's intriguing is that he's, you know, and probably a rather damning statement for the Obama administration is that the Turks are saying, well, they haven't seen a serious plan to deal with ISIS yet. Welcome to our world, Turkey. We're familiar with that sense of confusion and frustration over there. Maybe this would be a good time for you guys to step up. If we're open to suggestions. You got any good ideas? They called for a no-fly zone. Fine. I don't really think that, you know, ISIS doesn't have much of an air force, so I don't really think that's a huge factor there. The parallel safety zone above the border, eh. And Syrian and Iraqi opposition forces to be trained and armed. Well, we're working on that, and that just doesn't happen overnight. So, you know, we're doing an airstrike here, an airstrike there. I think it may take a more serious force to go up against these guys. And I think that the limited approach of the Obama administration is running headlong up against reality here. This idea that, well, ISIS is a serious threat, but we can deal with it without any putting any troops on the ground. It's not looking too good for that assessment right now.
And then on the Erdogan front, Jim, you used to live in Turkey, so you have a perspective on this that's probably more detailed than most people. This is a guy who, of course, is the head of a country that for years was held up as, look what a secular Muslim state can do if it doesn't go radical. But now he, of course, was on the side of Hamas against Israel. He's sided with radicals in a number of different areas. At the same time, he hates the Assad government just as much as anybody, but he also sees the threat from ISIS. So is this guy playing both sides? Does he feel threatened badly from both sides? What's his rationale here, do you think?
You know, it's accurate to say that in recent years, the so-called moderate Islamist has been a little bit more Islamist and a little bit less moderate,
right,
in terms of his rhetoric. Now, when I was over there, and admittedly, this is back 2005, 2007, you know, metaphorically a generation ago, when I was there, the Turkish government seemed to believe that Bashar Assad was a reformer. This is before this was in vogue in U.S. policy circles to say what a nice guy he was, and that they thought he was a guy they could work with, and he was going to modernize Syria and all that kind of stuff. And so some of the great ironies to see them turn into one of the forces really pushing for the end of the Assad regime. Erdogan has had very big, bold visions of being the preeminent power player in the Middle East. They were going to be the bridge between the Muslim world and the West, and they were going to be indispensable and all that stuff. And most of that has ended up crashing down around them, in part due to their own missteps, but also in part to the chaos that has engulfed Syria, that is continuing to engulf Iraq, and Iran continuing to be the difficulty that they are. So there's, I don't want to say necessarily schizophrenia in the Turkish political system right now, but I think that they've always had a certain paranoid streak. Seeing a lot of trouble on their doorstep is not going to do anything to calm this down. One thing I also kind of learned very much from my interactions with the Turks was they do have a very conspiratorial mindset. So whatever is going on, they will be convinced that it's actually somebody secretly out to get them. That will be the interpretation of that. And how that will fuel their decision-making remains to be seen.
Good insights there. On to the crazy martini now. And Jim, this is from a Washington Post University of Maryland poll. When it comes to the statewide races in Maryland, 2002 being a notable exception in the last generation or two, Democrats are pretty much guaranteed to win statewide races. But the latest poll between Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown, a Democrat, and the Republican nominee Larry Hogan suggests that this race is getting tighter than a lot of folks expected. It's still a 9-point lead for Brown, 47-38, but the numbers have certainly narrowed since the summer. And the big issue for Hogan, of course, is taxes. The catchphrase is that Martin O'Malley and Anthony Brown even taxed the rain. And so that is a major issue for voters, 30%. And for those identifying that as their biggest issue, they're breaking big time for Hogan. But a lot of other people are still going with Brown, even on health care. And he was in charge of probably the second worst botched rollout of a state health exchange last year, right behind Oregon. Complete disaster. So people like him better. The poll also basically saying nobody wants Martin O'Malley to run for president because they aren't really happy with his job as governor. So people have no appreciation for what the Democrats have done there. They don't like it. They disapprove, yet they're likely to elect another one.
Yeah, this is really kind of a maddening poll result. And we shouldn't, granted, this is a state where the number of registered Democrats is about 2-1 to registered Republicans. So yes, it's a very heavily Democratic state. But two intriguing factors. One is that Brown won the Democratic primary reasonably easily, and he has been the lieutenant governor. As you mentioned, he was in charge of the state's Obamacare exchange, which basically blew up on impact. You figure this guy would be vulnerable, that this is not a particularly good record, to look back upon, and that the state recognizes that O'Malley has not been good for them. But they're going to vote for the guy who they assess to be basically the same as the guy that they're dissatisfied with. And you look at that and you kind of conclude maybe there's no hope for that state. cut it off, let it float off into the Atlantic. Because really, the findings of that poll are so contradictory. People don't really seem to believe, you know, like they completely wholeheartedly reject the notion of not just, you know, a Republican as an option, but they already rejected the idea of another Democrat as an option. I mean, the Democratic machine has an ironclad grip on that state. And the funny thing is, it's in the hands of the voters to demand something better, and they just refuse to do it.
It's years of habit, I guess, that it's hard to break. Jim, it's good to be back. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.